It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson and wishing you a happy Monday. And how about those Kansas City Chiefs? Being a Kansas kid, I'm pretty jazzed to see after, 49, 50 years, that they are the Super Bowl champions. It was pretty impressive. I have both Niners fans and Kansas City Chiefs fans in my family, so somebody was going to be happy and somebody was going to be sad. Steve, can you believe it? It was pretty awesome.
You know, the first half, I guess, was pretty even when the score was 10-10 at half, but I got a little nervous in the third quarter. It just seemed like San Fran was just getting into their game plan, and they certainly seemed to be keeping KC from being in their game plan, and KC had that ragtag kind of look to it, and all the plays were, you know, really short. And, mm-hmm. But boy, in the fourth quarter, just like the commentator mm-hmm. said, hey, they had the Niners right where they want them, even yeah. though they were behind.
Well, you know, early in the game when Kansas City went for it on fourth and one, I thought that was a pretty gutsy right there at the beginning of the game or so, but it certainly paid off. So congratulations to the Kansas City Chiefs. We have a great show planned for you today. We'll go through some headlines, some things that you need to know in this first segment, and then jumping in with Tim Neville, former State Senator Tim Neville, will be joining us regarding the Liberty or the Republican Liberty Caucus. They're keeping an eye on a variety of legislation that's being proposed down at the State House. And then third and fourth segment is Jay Davidson. He is the founder, the CEO, the chairman of First American State Bank. It's always a great conversation when we have Jay on the show. So be sure and stay tuned for all of this. As we look at these issues, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. It's never compassionate to take other people's stuff, whether their rights, their property, or their freedom via force, whether it's with a weapon policy or unpredictable and excessive taxation. And, you know, some of the code words for force out there are regulate, a rule, comply. When you start to hear those words, you realize that those are words that government is really getting out of the box that they're supposed to be in. We're seeing continued socialization of the key things that if we're able to freely and responsibly use them, our lives are better. As government comes in and controls them through rules and regulations, and what happens typically is the supply becomes more limited, the price goes up, and the quality goes down. And some of those key things that we see this happening in is transportation, education, energy, housing, water, broadband, communications, healthcare. We're seeing government continue to try to encroach on all of those things. And so that's why we do this show, is to help each of you get your brains around these issues so that you can converse with your friends, your family, and your colleagues about the principles that are so important to us today. Want to say thank you always to the team, to producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, and also to you listeners out there. Each of you are treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose. So go out today and strive for excellence, just like Patrick Mahomes. How do you say that? Mahomes, is that right? The quarterback for Kansas City. You talk about somebody who was striving for excellence. That whole team did a heck of a job.
Mahomes.
Okay. Sorry. I should listen to it all day. I should have heard that.
He's going to Disneyland. He doesn't care.
He's going to Disneyland. I did see that. And be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. I did an op-ed that we put out yesterday with the newsletter on the homelessness industrial complex, and have gotten quite a bit of feedback on that. So you want to take a look at it. It's certainly follow the money. Steve, have you had a chance to take a look at that yet?
I did, not just once, but twice. And it makes my head spin. The more I read it, the more my head spins. The dollars involved and essentially the never-ending nature of it, it just it's breathtaking, but not in a good way.
Yeah, so be sure and check it out. That is at kimmunson.com, and it is the op-ed on the homelessness industrial complex. Since we're going to have Jay Davidson on today, and he certainly is a free market guy, I thought our quote should come from Ludwig von Mises. And von Mises was an Austrian school economist, historian, and sociologist. Mises wrote and lectured extensively on behalf of the classical liberalism. He's best known for his work on praxeology, a study of human choice and action. He was born in 1881 in Ukraine and died in 1973 in New York City. And he said this, this is Ludwig von Mises, "Freedom is indivisible. As soon as one starts to restrict it, one enters upon a decline on which it is difficult to stop." Again, freedom is indivisible. As soon as one starts to restrict it, one enters upon a decline on which it is difficult to stop. Okay. And a little levity for the morning. This was heard at the Wharton School of Business. A man was walking along a road in the countryside, and he comes across a shepherd and a huge flock of sheep. He tells the shepherd, "I will bet you $100 against one of your sheep that I can tell you the exact number of this flock." The shepherd thinks it over. It's a big flock, so he takes the bet. 973, says the man. The shepherd is astonished because that is exactly right. He says, "Okay, I'm a man of my word. Take an animal." So the man picks one up and begins to walk away. "Wait," cries the shepherd, "let me have a chance to get even. Double or nothing that I can guess your exact occupation." And the man says, "Sure." And the shepherd says, "You are an economist for a government think tank." "Amazing," responds the man. "You're exactly right. But tell me, how did you deduce that?" "Well," said the shepherd, "put down my dog and I will tell you." Okay, let's jump in here. You know, normally we're doing a bill a day. Patty is keeping an eye on things out there.
I'm sorry. I mean, we're always pressed for time. We're like the Egyptian mummy. We're pressed for time. There's so much in that gag line or in the punchline there, and we dare not take the time to go into it. But, man, is that spot on.
I'm glad you like that. Okay, let's jump in here because we're going to have Tim Neville on in the second segment on a variety of legislation. But Patty found this, and this was in Complete Colorado. It's by Scott Weiser. And there's some new lobbying regulations that could create problems for citizens talking to state legislators. So first thing, this is just a rule that came down from the Secretary of State. So this is really outside of, she's not supposed to be in that business. But in late December, Secretary of State Jenna Griswold issued new lobbying rules that may put private citizens at risk of being legally sanctioned if they don't follow the complex regulations, with one former Secretary of State staffer calling the rules potentially unconstitutional. Lobbying roughly means communicating or asking others to communicate with a wide range of state public officials, including the governor, any member of the state legislature, and others involved in creating legislation. It covers virtually any communication with those officials, whether or not the General Assembly is in session, that involves any bill, resolution, amendment, nomination, appointment, or report, whether or not in writing, pending or proposed for consideration by either House of the General Assembly or committee thereof. The statutory definition of lobbying has been on the books for a long time, but it is traditionally only applied to professional lobbyists who are paid to discuss such matters with officials and their clients' employees. The rules that Griswold issued are found in the Colorado Code of Regulations. They have the force of law and can be changed by the Secretary of State without legislative action. But they are also subject to the state law found in the Colorado Revised Statutes. The regulations often refer to the statutes for definitions and other details. These recursive references can make interpreting rules quite complex. The way regulations are drafted and issued can lead to conflicts with the statutes and even the constitutions, both state and federal. Traditionally, private individuals who discuss legislation with officials on their own behalf, say over a cup of coffee in their district, were exempt from the definition of lobbying in the rules. The previous rules explicitly excluded a political committee, volunteer, lobbyist, or citizen who lobbies on his or her behalf from the definition of lobbying for the purposes of regulation by the Secretary of State. Steve, do you see the danger that we have occurring here? We see the Secretary of State potentially putting in place a rule that could limit an everyday citizen from communicating with their legislator. This is so antithetical to the American idea, and so antithetical to the, you know, the rugged individualistic spirit of Colorado that built us. It is really, it's very disturbing and it's very dangerous, because ultimately it could start to limit some voices, because when you get government involved in these rules and regulations, then the people that are enforcing the rules and regulations can decide on who they're going to enforce them on and who they're not going to enforce them on. And ultimately this could put an individual citizen at risk of then having to hire an attorney to fight whatever these allegations might be. This is really, really wrong. Steve?
I can only assume that, I mean, I don't have a real high opinion of lobbying at the federal level. I mean, I think that's really, it smells to high heaven. And I can only assume that lobbying at the state level isn't any better. You like to use the phrase PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats. And I put a S in there, S-I's, for special interests. I can only assume, again, that usually most of the lobbying that's going on is special interest that seeks to circumvent the normal procedures and processes, protocols, for bringing legislation, you know, to the different
well, and,
bodies.
And, you know, so a professional lobbyist, there is no way that everyday people can be down there keeping track of everything that is going on, going
sure.
down and sitting there waiting to testify at hearings, to go to committee meetings, to
yes.
go to – there is no way that everyday people have the time to totally keep an eye on that. And so different industries, they certainly – they hire somebody to keep an eye on that. And I mean, that's the way it works now. I mean, there just isn't enough time. You know, organizations need to hire people. But what we've seen now is everyday folks, as we saw the overreach last year with this legislature, that everyday folks, when they saw it really affected their families, they took the time. I was down there for a couple of the hearings, and there were moms down there with strollers.
Yes.
And they certainly have been contacting their legislators. Secretary of State Griswold, I think, is going after these people that became involved last year. And
I think you're right.
I think that that's exactly what this is all about. And so thank you to Patty for catching that. I'm not quite sure what to do about it yet. Well, the first thing to do would be to make sure that you show up at the ballot box next time. Let's see, I think she's in for 4 years, so she's what got – I don't know how much more time she has on that. But, you know, maybe we can ask former State Senator Tim Neville when he comes on. Before we do that, though, yesterday was the Super Bowl, and my husband stopped by and brought home a variety of Hooters wings for dinner last night. And it was delicious. The coleslaw was delicious. Everything was just delicious. And so Hooters is a great place to go watch the games or pick it up on the way home. Now that the Super Bowl is over, we're going to start to really focus on the Avs and the Nuggets, and Hooters is the place to watch all those games. And you can try their new roasted wings. Wednesday is Dine-In Wing Day. All the wings you can eat for $15.99. And as I mentioned, if you don't want to cook, drop by and pick up Hooters wings, bring them home, or you can have them delivered right to your front door. For more information, go to kimmunson.com. All of my sponsors are there. And be sure and patronize all of them, because I highly recommend them. So let's go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with former State Senator Tim Neville on some of the legislation that the Republican Liberty Caucus is keeping an eye on. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Try to see it my way. Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Thrilled to have on the line with me former State Senator Tim Neville. He's keeping an eye on some of the legislation that's occurring down at the State House. Did I say State Senator? I hope I did, Tim Neville. It's a Monday morning.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, good. How are you doing?
Good morning, Kim. I know you got limited time, but... We could fire through some bills, and hopefully everybody else then can go to rlcco.org and take a look at the other things that are happening, the good, the bad, the ugly, the ridiculous.
How okay, I'm good, and that's rlcco.org, right? rlcco.org.
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Okay, let's jump in here, Tim, because it's pretty astonishing what's happening down there. So, you know, I have a quick question.
Well,
I have a quick question before we go get into that. Did you hear what I had just mentioned about the Secretary of State and these potential lobbying rules by any chance?
I had not. I just got on the line, but I had read that yesterday or the day before. Basically, they want you to shut up and go away so that they can do the damage to your, you know, to your constitutional republic without you being able to say something about it.
That's okay. You were able to make that... very concise. What could people do about this?
Well, I think first thing they've got to be, this is a participation sport. If you want to keep your liberty and your freedom, you've got to participate.
Okay.
And that's where we've tried to focus with, the Republican Liberty Caucus is just allowing people to basically see what their legislators are doing or not doing out there and then take it from there.
Okay.
But, there's a lot that they're doing to you.
Okay. So let's jump in here. What do you want to let our listeners know about?
Well, sure. After all those horrible ads on Super Bowl and how effective they were with spending millions of dollars, and I figured I'd go with a funny bill or whatever. That Senate Bill 125 prohibits exotic animals in traveling performance. So it's kind of the anti-circus bill. That's a Democrat-sponsored bill. They want to keep you safe from exotic animals and circuses. But forget about building roads and bridges. That's Senate Bill 125.
Okay.
Then it gets uglier after that because Senate Bill 137 is a bipartisan bill that would have the state provide waivers, FERPA waivers, for every person that is sending their kids back to school at the beginning of the year. The FERPA is basically Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. It keeps your children safe from information about their medical records going out to other people. And two of our legislators, one Republican, one Democrat, decided it'd be a good idea to allow the school districts with a simple waiver that probably has little explanation to it, to give them a blanket waiver to send that information out to everyone.
There's big danger in that. Okay.
Yeah. Senate Bill 138, it's a consumer protection construction defect. Remember we had all the problems with the mm-hmm. construction litigation.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really worked hard in the legislature to kind of undo some of the damage that had been done over previous legislative sessions. 138 actually increases that damage and brings it back in. I call it the litigation magnet for Colorado. It basically takes the time for cure from 6 years to 10 years, puts a lot of unknown into the marketplace, and will really do a lot of damage from a standpoint of, construction. And at a time when we're trying to get affordable housing, it's one of the worst bills I see out there.
We could also call that the bill that would prevent young people from being able to buy a condominium and start to create equity and wealth instead of throwing money away on rent.
Oh, without a doubt. It's an unbelievably regressive bill from a progressive. Imagine that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's see. Senate Bill 141, interesting one. It's cash funds maximum reserve exception. This is a Republican bill, and I only bring this up because I know the bill. I know the issue pretty well. Several years ago in legislative audit, we always audit the cash funds because there's a rule in Colorado that, you know, those cash funds cannot get too large. If they get too large and there's a lot of unexpended cash, requires the those departments to actually lower their fees or do whatever else to bring those back. It's a limited government provision. This bill, actually, there were three cash funds from the Department of Public Safety out of about 10 of them, but these were all DPS cash funds, fire suppression cash fund, public school construction and inspection cash fund, and health facility construction inspection cash fund. They're allowed to go over for a period of time, but then the auditor came back and said, hey, you know, these have been over year after year after year. You need to take corrective action. The DPS actually said they agreed with that and said, we will take corrective action and have all these within line by the date of July 2020. Lo and behold, we have somebody that comes up and says, well, we really don't want to do that. We want to go ahead and eliminate that responsibility for mandating those funds to be at a certain level and basically take that away and allow them to grow as much as they'd like.
Wow.
Let's see. Yeah, moving along. Senate Bill 150, renewable natural gas standards. So this is renewable natural gas. This comes from a number of areas, biogas, hydrogen gas, carbon oxides from renewable energy sources, waste carbon dioxide, et cetera, et cetera. But it mandates that by January 2025, 5% of all gas is going to be renewable, 10% by 2030, and 15% by 2035. That's going to be an interesting trick, and what it will do is it'll add a bunch of expense to what your natural gas bill is currently.
Well, and you know, that has in there another code word that we're seeing a force, which is mandate. That's another word. Whenever you hear that, you know that they're heading towards socializing whatever it is they're talking about.
Sure. Well, let's move over to the House because the Senate's doing its damage, but let's look over to the House. Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. So this is a program that sets up a governmental agency anywhere they would like to set this up in any geographic area that is going to basically charge a fee on all of your insurance policies to provide money for grants for local and county government to then try to get money to deal with information for hazard mitigation. It's a bipartisan bill, and it creates a whole other layer of government and then basically taxes the people that are taking responsibility for mitigating their risk already.
And what number is that, Tim?
That is House Bill 1142.
Okay.
Let's see. House Bill 1191, because we don't have enough government, creates an outdoor recreation industry office. So we know we have a lot of outdoor recreation. It seems to be doing extremely well in Colorado. But we need a czar of outdoor recreation that reports to the governor's Office of Economic Development, of course,
mm-hmm.
because that's where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's House Bill 1191 would set that up. 1233, House Bill 1233. This is an interesting bill. Basic life functions in public spaces. It says it prohibits the state and county or city or government, any municipality, from restricting any person from conducting basic life functions in a public space unless the government entity can offer alternative adequate shelter to the person and the person denies the alternative adequate shelter. So this is basically right to rest, right to camp, right to,
this is the right to, yeah, number one and number two, wherever you want, huh?
Of course, of course. That's House Bill 1233.
Flippin' believable.
That is a Democrat bill.
Oh, my.
okay. House Bill 1238. safe and healthy learning environment for students. So to do that, we already spend billions and billions of dollars in giving this to our school districts, our local school districts. But now we have to have a grant program to help that because apparently that's not happening. So instead of holding people accountable, let's go ahead and throw more money at it with another grant program. That's House Bill 1238. Wow. And again, that is another Democrat bill.
Okay. Tim, we've got probably time for just quickly two more. So
that's what I got.
Wow. Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, you bet. House Bill 1204, tax. Now, these are, I wanted to save the good bills for last. So there are two good bills that we noticed. House Bill 1204 is a tax deduction for a donation to a scholarship organization. It allows local governments, it's basically a school choice. Several other states are doing this already. It allows individuals and businesses to take a tax deduction, limited tax deduction, to allow for money to go into, to be utilized to send students that probably couldn't afford it anyway to either other private schools or charter schools or whatever they might want to do to get the best education opportunity they have. That's House Bill 1204.
Okay.
An excellent bill. And last but not least, House Bill 1239 is a consumer protection concerning vaccinations. We've had a lot of conversation about vaccinations, forced vaccinations, vaccination damage, whatever else. This bill simply says that you're going to have to tell people and provide information to them and disseminate vaccine information to patients so they understand what risks there might be. And it also puts limits and keeps other entities, public health entities and other people, from actually vaccinating your children without parental approval.
Wow. Okay. Hey, former State Senator Tim Neville, you have done yeoman's work on this, getting through all these. Thank you so much. We're going to do this every Monday morning while the legislature is meeting. So thank you so much for keeping us up to speed on all of this.
My pleasure, Kim. Have a good day.
Okay. Thanks so much. And let's jump over to Jason McBride. Jason, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
What about those Chiefs?
I was happy the Chiefs won, and it was a good game, and the halftime show wasn't insulting to our country.
So, and, you know, the other thing is we got through the whole thing safely. I'm always excited when we have, you know, such a big event here in America, and we get through it, and, you know, we're safe. But speaking of safety, this coronavirus is really whacking the market out. Friday was a down day. So what are you thinking about that?
Well, it was down 600. I'd throw out also, you know, the fact that Brexit actually occurred on Friday kind of got overshadowed, and that may also have contributed to the drop we saw. Kim, I'll be quick. I know we're up against the clock. The S&P came right down to its 50-day moving average on Friday. So I'd be looking to see if we hold support here. If we take out Friday's lows with some power, then there's a possibility we could head down another 5 or 6% to around 3,000, 3,050. That's where the 200-day moving average is. So watch close here.
Okay, well, we will do that, and we'll keep folks up to date on that. And also, we are up against a time break, hard break today. But go to my website because we have all the information for the workshops that are going to be occurring this week. And you can lower your taxes. So, Jason, sorry to cut us so short today. But we're going to go to break. We'll have Jay Davidson when we come back. Be sure and go to KimMunson.com and sign up for the workshops with Presidential Wealth Management and Jason McBride and all of his colleagues. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
It's my party and I'll cry if I want to cry.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com, spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our email newsletters. And within about 24 hours, we have a great show recap with the podcast at the website as well. I am thrilled to have on the line with me, and that is Jay Davidson. He is the founder, chairman of the board, and CEO of First American State Bank, and also a partner of the Kim Munson Show. Jay Davidson, it's great to have you on the line.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for having me again.
Well, actually, we've been having requests to get Jay Davidson back on the show, and so I'm like, okay, I'm going to make sure that happens. So thank you.
Well, the reason they've been requesting it is that I make them look so much smarter.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Sure.
Okay. Well, let's jump in here because you actually are one very smart guy. And First American State Bank, is that considered a community bank?
Sure. We're a single entity, single location entity. We're very much involved in our community. Our job is to help the individual people in the community, and most especially to help the small businesses in the community.
Well, Jay, community banks have really been, I think, what has driven the success of mom-and-pop operations, of Main Street, of people going after their American dream. And under the Obama administration, we saw a lot of community banks either close or be gobbled up by some of the big banks. And I was very concerned about that. Do you recall how many community banks we lost during that time?
Well, there were 12,000 community banks in all, the 10 largest that are too big to fail, and all the rest of us. There were about 12,000 15 years ago. Today, there's about 5,000.
Boy, so to me, it seems like that's tightened up capital for people to start their businesses.
Yeah, the big banks can do loans to the small mom and pop shops. However, I mean, it's not efficient for them to deploy their capital, make their loans. If they can do a $100,000 loan or a $10 million loan, they're going to do a $10 million loan. I mean, that's just efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a $100,000 loan for a little bank like mine, that's good business. And we get in and know our clients. We know our region. We understand our local economies. So we're more able to make these kinds of loans for the mom-and-pop shops.
Well, and Jay, one of the things, you know, on the show, we talk about freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And there's actually code words for force. And one of the big ones is regulate. And and under the Obama administration, I think that regulations got even tighter and tighter in many different industries. Are you seeing any relaxing of those regulations now that President Trump has been in office for about a little over 3 years?
The effects took a few months, but it was incredible. As someone on the front lines of the regulatory world, the banking regulatory world, we've gone through 10 or 8 years of pure Hades. Under the Obama administration, regulations got extremely tight, dictatorial, very demanding, destructive of capital. The regulators attempted to take over our business. They totally ignored our rights to private ownership and to capital, tried to dilute us through forcing us to increase our capital. So I come from the most strenuous regulatory environment in 40 years in banking out of the Obama administration. The Trump administration has done quite the opposite. They've reduced regulations tremendously. their efforts, what they're telling everybody in the government, if you make a regulation, eliminate two. And they've actually held the bureaucrats' feet to the fire to make that happen. Today, we're back to working with our regulatory agencies in a cooperative manner, which is where, the way it should be. And some of the onerous activities that they've been involved in are going away. That said, Dodd-Frank is still on the books. This is a banking bill that is, tremendously convoluted. And it starts off by saying, we shall not bank banks that are too big to fail. And then it spends the next 5,000 pages creating banks that are too big to fail. And that's if you want a bank with a big bank, great, I say go there. But for the government to assist the big banks in growing stronger creates a systemic risk in the economy. If one of those guys does fail, somehow the government can't save them. We have a serious issue with our economy. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going too far afield here, but yes, the regulatory environment has changed dramatically. And business has done well because of that.
And just a comment, though, regarding the big banks. What I have learned, Jay, is that, you know, it used to be there was this narrative that there was one political party that liked big business and the other didn't like business. But as I've seen this, big business and big government from both sides of the aisle like each other, because big business can then use government, influence government to use policy to squelch the entrepreneur, the little guy. And so the fact that when Trump, and that was one of the first things that he did when he came into office, he said, for every new regulation, we have to get rid of two. I mean, that was just about day one when he did that. And here you're right, saying after 3 years that he's actually, that they're adhering to that. That is pretty amazing.
It is amazing. And you're right. I mean, in your dialogue, you said there's many names for force, and one of them is regulation. And I say you're 100% right. If the government wants to take over the private economy, private individuals, the very backbone of America, how we were formed, why we were formed, they can do it without firing a shot by regulating us to death. And they've started with the education, healthcare, the banking and finance industry, transportation, oil and gas. They're all over every one of these private businesses, telling them what to do and how to do it. Well, I submit to you that the most efficient use of capital is capitalism. It's allowing individuals and owners of banks or businesses to do what they will do best to serve their shareholder. And that will be the most effective implementation of capital available, not some government subsidy for Tesla to build his cars, or sort of wind energy or artificial intelligence. These are not pure capitalism. They're crony capitalism, the opposite of capitalism, the opposite of freedom.
You know, Jay, I've actually decided, because that word crony capitalism, I think, gives capitalism a bad name. And so I've worked to redefine that as cronyism, because capitalism in its truest form lets free people negotiate with each other. And so people can get rich if they come up with an idea, you know, a product or a service that other people will say, hey, you know what, that will bring value to my life, or that will help me create wealth for myself, and so I will trade my dollars for that. And that is capitalism. Cronyism is PBIs, these politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties, using policy to make themselves rich. And Jay, I think there's two ways to get rich. One is to come up with a great product or service that people will willingly trade for example, an iPhone. The other is to take it, and they can take it either via weapon, policy, or Steve, producer Steve's most unfavorite, excessive and unpredictable taxation.
Mm-hmm. You're right on the money, and crony capitalism is misleading, and it does give capitalism a bad name. The whole idea that you're talking about in capitalism is freedom. And the definition of fair market value is really interesting. It's a willing buyer and a willing seller agreeing on a transaction without outside coercion. That is the definition of fair trade. And if that happens, then both parties are satisfied with the transaction. When the government gets involved, they change and distort and harm the economic transaction that occurs. I'd go further and say that our constitutional republic, which attempts to guarantee the sanctity of the individual and his or her freedom, that constitutional republic gave rise to capitalism. They are one and the same. And this idea of socialism, communism, fascism, et cetera, even democracy, democracy is not mentioned in the Constitution anywhere, by the way. But any one of these forms of government brings power to the federal government, to the bureaucrats, to a ruling elite, and they make the decisions, not the individual.
And we are seeing that big time right now with what is being proposed down at the State House here in Colorado. And that's why every day we are highlighting a bill that's being proposed so that we can keep our listeners informed on what's happening there. Because, as you mentioned, I mean, the real battle of ideas that we have here is freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And the different words for force can be regulate, compliant, all those different kinds of things. But Jay Davidson, let's go to break. When we come back, I'd like to chat with you a little bit about the Fed, because it's now celebrating its 117th year in existence. And whenever you say the Fed, that can actually get an emotional response from a lot of people. And so let's talk about that. And then also, if you can just let us know a bit about what you're thinking about all this impeachment. So this is Kim Munson. On the line with me is Jay Davidson, the founder, chairman of the board, and CEO of First American State Bank. We will be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson.com.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com, spelled MONSON.com. We have all of our show recaps and podcasts there. And sign up for our email newsletter. That'll keep you apprised of all the upcoming guests. Really pleased to have on the line with me Jay Davidson. He is the founder, chairman of the board, and CEO of First American State Bank, and also a valued partner of the Kim Munson Show. Jay, it's always great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Kim. It's a pleasure.
So last week we had Dr. Brian Dmitrovic on, who had written the book with Larry Kudlow on JFK and the Reagan Revolution, and just talked about, you know, lower taxes and stable money and, you know, lowering spending, all these things that both JFK and Reagan espoused that really got the economy going. But another thing that Brian talked about was the Federal Reserve, and that's tends to be actually a rather emotional conversation with people. The Federal Reserve has been in existence for over 117 years. It was brought in kind of during that progressive time in the early 1900s. And what do you think about the Fed, Jay Davidson?
Well, I happen to know a little bit about it. I'm a Fed member bank, and I'm regulated by the Federal Reserve. And, of course, I'm a student of monetary policy, because what they decide on interest rates and liquidity or money supply has a major impact on banking, on us. So, yeah, I do have a somewhat of an insider's view that some people may not have. What do I think about the Fed? Well, you got to separate them into a couple of components. Number one would be their monetary policy arm, which would be the FOMC, or Federal Open Market Committee, composed of predominantly of presidents of the local Fed branches, and then a few other banker types and economists. These are the ones that the chair would be the Ben Bernanke in the past, and Mr. Powell today. They make the decision on monetary policy, and the two tools that they, the predominant tools that they have, are interest rates. They do that by controlling Fed funds rates, which is the rate that we borrow from the Fed, we banks borrow from the Fed. And if they raise Fed fund rates, then we have to raise our rates. And if they lower rates, then we can lower our rates, et cetera. So that's how they control us on the interest rates. On money supply, or liquidity, as we call it in banking, they have the right with the Treasury to make more money or make less money, or increase liquidity or decrease liquidity. When they increase liquidity, that has a tendency to stimulate the market, just as when they drop interest rates, that has a tendency to de-stimulate the market, or excuse me, stimulate the market also. I have to get my allegories right here. So what do I think about that? Well, look at the last 10 years and look at what the Fed did during the Obama era and look at the results. The Fed printed $4.5 trillion in a move called quantitative easing. They created out of nothing $4.5 trillion with nothing backing it, and increased the Fed's balance sheet from a consistent $800 billion to over $5 trillion during the Obama era. On interest rates, they dropped interest rates to zero and held them there for quite some long time. Now, that should be tremendously stimulative to the economy. And the net effect was pathetic. The economy did not expand under Obama. In fact, sometimes it retracted, contracted under Obama. And then people say, well, what happened? Why didn't the Fed's policies work? And then they just ignore it. Well, the fact is, the counterbalance to the Fed policies on monetary policy is what's called fiscal policy. And that's run by predominantly the House and the President with the help of the Senate. And that determines the three things that are critical in fiscal policy. Number one, tax rates. Number two, regulation. And number three, government spending. Those three elements, when done right, can help the economy like turning on a light switch. President Trump came in, dropped regulation tremendously. Like you said, for every one regulation, he had to get rid of two. And I can attest to that in the banking industry. That did transpire. Number two, his Tax Reduction Act reduced taxes and stimulated the economy. Number three, Trump is a dismal failure on spending. He incorporated another $1 trillion or something like that. It's pathetic. But of the three underpinning issues on fiscal policy, two of them were enough to get this economy back up and moving after 8 years of stagnation. So I submit to you that the Fed's monetary policy is very inefficient and can be quite destructive. And number two, that the fiscal policy run by the House of Representatives, predominantly because they have the spending authority, the Senate, and then, of course, the administration, the president, has much more impact on the economy. And the best fiscal policy is less government. Every time that happens, we get an economy that's exploding. And that's what's happened here in the last couple of years.
Well, and as I look at this, so tax rates came down and also regulations came down. So what that means is that is moving towards freedom versus force. And when we move towards freedom, everyday people can thrive and flourish. But when you say, Jay Davidson, that tax rates went down, I think a lot of people think, oh, that means tax revenues went down. But actually, when tax rates go down, there many times is additional revenues that come into the government because more people are working. It's a much broader base. Have you seen, do you have any reports on that yet?
Absolutely. What people miss is tax revenue equals economic activity times the tax rate. You can drop the tax rate. That tends to stimulate economic activity, which then increases the number of the amount of tax revenue that comes to the government. And you're exactly right. By reducing the taxes, it allows every individual and every person that's working for a living, it allows business owners and businesses to retain more of the money that they earn, pay less of it to the federal government, which is extremely inefficient in its handling of money. I would much rather capitalism handle the money than a bureaucracy. But you're exactly right. We have seen the economy boom. It is going like gangbusters right now. I've had a couple of the best years of my life in banking over these last couple of years.
Well, and then everyday people can thrive and flourish, which that is what is really unique, I think, about the American idea. Let's just very quickly on government spending. You know, that's a tough one. We've got to get it under control, Jay Davidson, because, you know, when we look back in history, we as Americans, we've spent blood and treasure to make sure that we pass on something good to the next generation, and that is liberty, the responsible exercise of freedom. And I feel it's very irresponsible, almost immoral, that we think that we are going to pass on a big fat IOU to the next generation. But if we can get this economy really going, I think, and if Trump gets reelected and are able to hold the Senate so that he doesn't have a stonewalling, I think that I really hope in his second term that he will start to bite this government spending issue.
Well, it's an issue that both Republicans and Democrat presidents have ignored, and they're afraid of it. It is the third rail. What it requires is austerity and discipline. It's what you would do were you to overspend in your household. You would stop your spending immediately. You would reduce your expenditures. You try to increase your income. And that's not fun. It's difficult. But it has to be done. There's a point where the government debt, which when the government issues treasuries, that's debt. The government has to pay that back. And that's the vehicle that they use to go into debt with our treasuries. We're getting a preferential treatment because we're a low-risk economy. Eventually, that's going to evaporate. And eventually, these foreign nations that buy our debt, our treasuries, are going to stop buying it. Then we will not be able to get debt except at extremely high interest rates or yields in the case of the treasury. And that will decimate our economy. It is highly irresponsible for a Republican or a Democrat to continually spend.
Okay, so we'll have to keep our fingers crossed, I think, for the next 4 years probably, because I don't see anything happening right now during an election year, which brings us to President Trump and the impeachment. What's your comments on this, Jay Davidson?
First and foremost, I think the Democrats know that they will never get Trump impeached. Well, not impeached, but thrown out of office. They can impeach him, and they've done that. But the requirement is that the House impeaches, and they've done it, and then the Senate holds a trial, and two-thirds of the Senate have to vote to vacate the presidency. Two-thirds. There is no way the Democrats that's going to happen, and the Democrats know that. So why did they go forward with this? It's political theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only way that they can stop Trump. They know they won't win. They know that they won't kick him out of the presidency. But by smearing him like they've been doing for the past 3 years and 3 months, they think that they will win in the 2020 election in November. I think it's truly sad that they would use this part of our Constitution to subvert the freedoms that exist in our nation. And I'm not just knocking the Democrats, but some of these never-Trumper Republicans are as bad. I think it's egregious. I think it's wrong. Now, is Trump really white? No, not at all. What he did was wrong, but it's not impeachable. And Alan Dershowitz says as much. By the way, he's a Democrat, and he's on Trump's team. So that tells you something about this man. So I'm very disappointed at this nonsense, that spending so much time, so much effort, diverting the government's attention away from its job, which actually might be a good thing, into this nonsense is a terrible abuse of the power that they have. And I hope that the public will recognize this activity for what it is and punish those perpetrators in the polls and in the voting, stop sending them money, tell them to stop this nonsense, and let's get on with life here. I mean, where's the statesmanship? There's none right now.
Well, the veil is off on what's been happening in Washington, D.C., and if Trump does get another 4 years, I think that it could be very exciting for everyday hardworking Americans, no matter what the descriptor is that you have, because a rising tide lifts all boats. Jay Davidson, First American State Bank, you're the founder, chairman of the board, CEO. Thank you so much. It's always great to talk with you, and thank you so much for your partnership for the Kim Munson Show as well.
Thank you, Kim. It's a pleasure, and keep up the good work.
Okay, great. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right.
And our quote for today is from Ludwig von Mises. He says, "The Marxians' love of democratic institutions was a stratagem only, a pious fraud for the deception of the masses. Within a socialist community, there is no room left for freedom." So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.